Welcome to the Best Hour of Their Day podcast with your hosts, Jason Fernandez.
And me, Jason Ackerman. With more than 20 years in the business,
as both coaches and affiliate owners,
our passion is to help create world-class affiliates
and coaches by building
better
boxes.
Welcome to
the Best Hour of Your Day.
Fern, we are going full circle.
Do tell.
Well, we're going to talk about the whiteboard brief, and this is going all the way back to one of our very first episodes nearly 5 years ago.
2019, is that right?
Yeah, I didn't do the math, but 4 or 5 years ago.
I mean, what was the date? April what?
Oh, shoot. We just did that too,
didn't we?
No.
I'll find it.
I think it was like April 11th. April 11th or 12th.
I think it was the 12th. It was the 12th. Anyway, this was definitely one of our first episodes ever, I'm pretty sure.
It makes sense because it's the first thing that happens in class and is often overlooked. The importance of it is tremendous when it comes to running an ideal class, when it comes to setting the expectations. You know, one of the most controversial things we talk about is time caps. And I always tell people, if you're doing time caps, it's because your whiteboard brief needs work, and people get butthurt about it, but it's true.
It's, we talked about this fucking way too many times, honestly, and people still don't listen, but it's one of the more pivotal things that you do in a class. And it's the shortest thing that you will do in most instances, meaning like it's the least amount of time that you will do any particular activity in the course of your lesson plan, but it sets the tone for everything. It also, it also is one of the best indicators of a coach's competency. Like if I watch your whiteboard brief, I'm like, I could with very good confidence predict how the class is going to go based on that 3 to maybe 4 minutes.
Accurate. That's really accurate. You think that's because they're a better coach, or do you think I think it's all the same, but if you coach long enough, you naturally get better at public speaking.
Well, I think yes, you get better at public speaking, but you also have enough reps to whittle out all of the unnecessary information, but then also skillfully bubble up the important things to the top. So so I always like to think like, what's important about a whiteboard brief? And it's like, well, you should say this and you say this. And then I'm like, okay, well, let's dumb it down to like one thing. Like what is, if I was to gauge the importance of a whiteboard brief, and I would distill it down to this. What do the athletes leave the whiteboard brief with? Like what's the primary thing that they leave with? I'm like, that's the most important thing. Right. So forget all the time and all that other kind of stuff. But like, if they leave with the answer in hand, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I think that's where we tell people you don't need time caps. It's like you're not giving them the answer.
Oh, man, somebody else. Oh, you and I were just talking about this. Like this goes back to like a little bit what we were talking about. I was like, hey, sometimes we have to remember, and this is as a coach, is like sometimes what you don't say is just as important as what you do say.
That's a great, you know, you and I were talking about this. As coaches, you're very good. You're great at, I think what people love about you is you're black and white. And I was having a conversation with one of our clients the other day, and I'm like, I'm the emotional one, right? Like I'm the one that's like, I'm attached and I just care about you and I want you to be good. And not that you don't do that as well, but you're also very good at like the black and whiteness of it. And one of those things, like you mentioned, is if you don't tell your members, no, they hear like, do it.
Yeah, they're like, he believes in me.
Yeah, like, hey, coach, we're doing Fran today. You know, I've never done a 95-pound thruster, but I'm going to do it today. And if you're like, I don't know, they're like, so you're saying I should? Versus like, hey, no, you cannot do that.
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. So I think there's a skill there, right? So I think there is a time and a place for a yes and a no. And we'll use a Joelism because we like talking about Joel. Be like, yes and no are full sentences, you know? and you just jolted me after I jolted you. You just jolted me after I jolted you. But there is a place for some wiggle room. What's the gray? But I do think in a lot of instances, particularly if we're talking about stimulus, I think you should tell people what the target is. And then I think it can be beneficial to tell people what the target is not. Right. So for instance, like, hey guys, we'll just stick with Fran. We're going to do Fran. Guys, we want this to be something between 3 to 8 minutes, which means that 12 is off the table. If you think you're going to do this in 12 minutes, we need to do some scaling in here. So 12 is not acceptable. And that paints a totally different picture because, like, I could do it prescribed at 12, but, like, he just said that that's not acceptable. So, okay, great. Versus if I say, you know, hey guys, we want to do, you know, 3 to 8 minutes and, you know, but, you know, for some of you might be a little bit on the fence there and we'll figure that out as we go. And somebody's just like, okay, I can load it up and I can go. Right. Instead of me cutting that off and saying, without saying, no, you can't do that. I'm just saying, like, that's not appropriate for this workout.
I think that's a great point. I rarely consider that, right? Like, hey, cool, we're doing Fran. The stimulus is 3 to 5 minutes. What's not acceptable is anything above 7, you know, which is kind of a time cap. You're not saying I'm going to cut you off. You're just saying, hey, I will be disappointed in you if you're still going at 7 minutes.
I don't even think it's disappointment. I think what you're doing is you're establishing the intent for the day, right? So I posted that thing about, like, hey, when you walk in as a coach every day, you should walk in and you should coach with intention, whether it's working on group management or visual cues or whatever. But I need to give the athlete the intention for today. The intention is this time frame. The intention is not twice that time frame because you feel like trying extra hard. You know, this is the intent for the day. And if we miss that intent knowingly, well, that's a training mistake, you know, and particularly if you're not training for anything specific, that's even sillier. Mm-hmm. So I think it's how we frame things and how we guide people to the target, as well as highlighting, like, here's why hitting the target is beneficial, right? Versus not, because I think we overlook that. I'd be like, well, they went double the time frame. And I'm like, so I don't know. I just ask you a question. What are some safe assumptions that you can make if somebody misses a time domain by, I don't know, 5 minutes?
They went too heavy.
Okay, so so let's stay there. So they went too heavy, which means we can make some assumptions about what?
Well, a couple things. One, in the specific warm up, I probably didn't watch them. Or in the WOD buildup, if you have a WOD buildup.
I asked a bad question. Let me ask a better question. So what assumptions could you make about their movement?
It's not good.
Right. Okay. So I'm like, okay. So that's why it's not good. Right. It's like, oh, I tried hard, but I'm like, but you moved like shit. That's not good.
And there's a point where it's like, no matter how well you move, if you go too heavy, I know your movement's going to be worse.
It's going to be worse because now I'm probably very likely doing it under extreme duress or fatigue, right? If I'm taking twice as long, I mean, we all know how bad Fran is, and just do Fran for 5 minutes longer than you want to. Like, your movement's not getting better, you know? And I think that is the key takeaway. And I think this is important too, because a lot of people like to get on their high horse about, like, well, we have good coaching standards. And I'm like, I disagree if you have to put time caps on there and if you're not saying these things at the whiteboard. I strongly disagree.
And let's be clear, you know, the show isn't about time caps, but we get it. If you have to have time caps in your box to keep classes running on time and you have 3 in a row, do it. Like, that's not a bad thing. However, it should be a backup plan, like a way backup plan.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Here's what I would tell you, right? So, like, it's not to poo-poo time caps. Here's how I think we could look at it. If I'm having to use them regularly, it is a signal of a deficiency in some way, shape, or form of my coaching skill. If my coaching is high caliber, rarely, if ever, should I be utilizing a time cap. And to go back to the point of this podcast, like, that starts at the whiteboard brief. How I brief something. At the wiper brief, what do I emphasize? Do I emphasize the load on the bar or do I emphasize the stimulus? Do I emphasize how the rounds should look and feel? Do I emphasize how many of a given set should be unbroken or how long the set should take. If I emphasize those things, people start to make their own calculation about what weight fits inside of the box that I just traced. Right. And they're like, oh, 95 doesn't fit in the box because I know what 95 feels like for me. 75 fits in the box. And all of a sudden now they're thinking about 75 versus like, hey guys, 95, 65. Now I've highlighted the load on there versus like what the outcome should be. So I just think it's an underutilized skill. I would even go so far as to say like it's an art. A good wiper brief is an art. Like there's components to it, meaning it's like, if you're going to paint a picture, it's like, yes, I've got my board up here. I've got paintbrushes. I've got paint, right? Like you've got the workout, you've got the loading, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, but what you create on the board is either art or slop, right? And same thing when I do a whiteboard brief, what happens at the whiteboard brief is either art or slop. And for most people, they're just like going up there, just fucking hand jamming on the whiteboard. And I'm like, that's slop, dude. That's not art. Now, how do you get to art? Yeah. How do you get to art? A lot of practice, dude. A lot of practice. And that's why we start everybody at the whiteboard brief. When we train coaches, I start them there.
And while we're at that, if you're interested, the Knowledge Pro is officially launched. If you want to get
better, affiliate owner, because you guys were asking. So there you have it.
Not right. Anyone, if you want to become a better coach and you're not a part of affiliate, your affiliate owner hasn't signed up for some reason.
So
you can hop in the Knowledge Pro.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
Between affiliate U, affiliate U is designed.
Not affiliate U. So the Knowledge versus the Knowledge Pro.
Oh, the Knowledge is simply content. It's kind of Netflix for coaches. Every day we put out a new piece of content, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. The Knowledge Pro is going to be that in addition to feedback from our awesome Knowledge Pro staff, which includes Pat Barber, Todd Acuto, Steve Haydock, and more. You're going to be able to hop on calls with them. You're going to be submitting homework. You're going to get reviews from the best coaches in the world. The criteria for our coaching staff is you must be a level 4. All of them also happen to be a part of seminar staff.
And Flow Master.
And, well, most.
You're not.
I'm saying I'm not. That's what I'm saying. But everybody else is. So if you want to become a better coach, the Knowledge Pro is the way to go.
And this was a piece of content that I still see regular comments on a whiteboard brief that was dropped in there that people are chiming in on like almost daily. The other thing is there is an option inside of the Knowledge for box owners. If you want to purchase it for your staff, you can do that, because that was a request that we got quite a bit. And so that is now available. So there's different levels in there. Either way, really, really awesome tool and really cool to see that thing grow. And we'll only continue to put more and more stuff there. Nate and I have some really cool ideas for Knowledge content that we'll be shooting here in about 2 weeks. So,
and I'm sure Cody or Christian or whoever's editing this episode will drop a link somewhere, wherever you're listening or watching. So we'll make it really easy for you to sign up. What do you think the three things that go wrong the most are in a whiteboard brief?
Three biggest areas or errors in a whiteboard brief is too much information. The wrong things are highlighted and it's too long.
Yeah, I definitely agree too. I mean, I think unless you've got the filthy 50s, and even then I would say like 4 minutes, but a good whiteboard, you know, I heard you say this, it's a whiteboard brief. Right. And I've taken plenty of classes and nothing, you know, for most of us, we have 1 hour a day to work out. And if you're talking for more than 3 minutes of my 1 hour, you are taking away from my time.
It is a lot of people like hear that and they're like, that's not enough time to brief it. And the reality is it's more than enough time to brief it. The people feel the same way when in a level 2 setting, when we do a couple of the drills and I'll say, hey, here's what I want you to do. I want you to teach the setup, get them ready to go. And I want you to have your first rep done inside of 30 seconds. And they're like, well, that's just way too fast. And then most of them end up doing it like 17 seconds. And it's just understanding, like, most of us are unaware of how much useless information we're actually distributing at the whiteboard. So you condense it down, you take out all of the fat, and you only give them what it is that you need. Now, if you get really efficient with it, and let's just say you crush the whiteboard brief and you give all the information in 2 minutes, well, then you have options. Now you can play around with it. Now I can go to some secondary piece of information that I want to emphasize. Maybe we talk a little bit more about strategy and things of that nature. But, you know, most people just really, really are unaware of how. Have you read Talk Like TED?
No, you keep telling me to. I gotta add that to my list. You sent me two other books yesterday. I've got too much.
Yeah, it's a good book. But one of the interesting components of that book is there is a very specific word count for the most popular TED Talks. And I'd be very curious if we were to look at whiteboard briefs, I bet there's a very specific word count. If we filmed hundreds and hundreds of them, which would be fairly easy to do, and we look like these are the top whiteboard briefs, I would be willing to bet, regardless of what the workout was, that there is a very specific word count range that the most effective whiteboard briefs fall in.
I would agree with you. We should do that. We should figure it out. You know what? Enough people sign up for the Knowledge Pro, start submitting their whiteboard briefs. We're going to get an answer for you. Give me your biggest, we've both been on seminar staff 10 years. I think in as non-arrogant way, I believe we are both very good public speakers. And I attribute that to being on staff in addition to thousands of hours coaching. What's been the biggest improvement in your public speaking? What's one thing you can give to the listeners? I've got mine. I'll give mine so you can think about it. Talk slower.
Is this public speaking generally, or is this in the context of a whiteboard brief?
In general, but I think if you become a better public speaker, you're going to be better at all public speaking, whiteboard brief being one. I think a lot of times people talk too fast and have filler words. Simply slowing down your talking, and I'm not suggesting in a way that you sound slow, but in a way where you just are really...
Hey, guys, welcome to class.
No, you just... You know, it's going from 100% or, you know, one time speed to like 0.9. Just a little slower to think about the words you're going to use.
A couple things there is, I agree with that 100%. The other thing is what kind of probably goes in, you could probably throw in there as well, is the intentional pause.
Pregnant pause, they call it.
Yeah. And they're kind of one and the same. I would contend that talking slower would in fact create an intentional pause, right? So I don't know, but let's just say that those are kind of the same, but they're related but not the same. Another thing, I don't remember where I was watching a video about something, and it was about public speaking, and I forget who was asking. Somebody gave a presentation at the summit recently, at one of the summits recently, and they were talking about how I forget who it was. And they were like, I get so nervous and I feel like I talk so fast when I step in front of the group. And I was like, oh, that's right. And I've practiced this many times at seminars. So the way to almost force your way into a conversational tone is to start by asking a question. The reason for this may or may not be obvious. If I start by asking a question, I force a pause because I would be waiting for a response.
Right.
Now, this kind of gets into like, was it a hypothetical question? Was it an actual question? But let's assume that either way, I'm waiting for a pause. And at which point I wait for the pause, simply by starting with a question and talking is... at least public speaking when done well is kind of like tennis, right? So I hit you the ball and I wait for you to hit it back to me. And so we go back and forth, and there's a natural ebb and flow of tone and conversation, which has a ton of carryover into coaching and cadence for calling reps, but that's a different story. So simply by starting off by asking a question will force you into a more conversational tone. Simply by asking a question, waiting for a response or some sort of reaction. It doesn't have to be a response necessarily. And then that will simultaneously adjust your respiratory rate and put you into a different state, at which point now I'm talking at a normal cadence versus really, really fast. So it's pretty cool where you can, whatever you're going to present, whether it's the whiteboard brief or whether you're giving a talk or presentation of some sort, you just ask a question. Like, what would that question be? It could be a question of the day. It could be a very simple, how's everybody feeling today? Yeah, well, you know, get the like, okay, cool. Yeah, good talk, guys. Right. So then I go right into the whiteboard brief. Like, okay, cool. Since you guys are feeling so awesome based on the non-responses, let's talk about the workout for today. Right? And then I go into the workout, and now I've intentionally like set this up that I would be forced into a conversational rhythm.
I like that. For me, and this may not work for everyone, you mentioned the Talk Like TED, and I think probably a good book to read if you want to improve at public speaking. I love watching comedians. Comedians are some of the best public speakers out there.
They are the best. They're the best public displays of verbal jousting with yourself, but you are actually interacting with the audience, but not like verbally. But can you imagine a comedian that never paused or that talked too fast?
Yeah, you'd miss the jokes.
Right.
But like for me, watching someone like Sebastian Maniscalco is one of my favorites. And you just like you find the comedians that work with your tone and your humor and that. And it's just a great way to improve. Watch some comedians, and I think that'll go a long way.
I watched the Matt Rife special recently. It was really good.
Yeah, I mean, you find the ones that do well with you. Kevin Hart is another one of my favorites. Just his storytelling is so good.
Hey guys, Fern here. Real quick, I just want to share a quick success story from one of the hundreds of gyms that we've been able to help inside of Affiliate U. And our mission in Best Hour of Their Day is to ultimately improve and grow the greater CrossFit community by building better boxes and creating better businesses with better coaching staff so we can bring CrossFit to the masses. Check it out. And if you think we can help you, don't hesitate to reach out.
I was looking for growth that was sustainable. I was ready for a challenge to get out of my comfort zone with kind of what we were doing and how we were doing it. And just the last year with COVID and the things that we've had to deal with, I just felt like we were doing the things we needed to just get by. And I was ready to move past that and just plug away and see what we could do with the business. And I felt I needed somebody to kind of challenge me and help me with some of the processes. As a result, I really felt more passion from just the coaching perspective, and even the business. Just felt more passion, wanted to be here more often. It's something that I always loved. And then you go through some changes and whatnot, and sometimes you kind of question yourself, but the drive that I have now in business is high. And I want to be at the gym. It's really enjoyable to be here. Now we have a process and a system for basically everything. And it's repeatable, and it's going to allow us to continue to move forward. For, you know, hopefully many, many years. You know, as a business owner, I got into business being, loving fitness and loving that idea of things, and helping other people. But also, there's other things that have to happen to be able to do that. With Affiliate University, the things that I'm able to have access to, with even if it's just a coach that's been through things or a business owner that's been through things, they're there for me to kind of answer those questions and go through that stuff. It's been awesome. And like I said, I just love my job now.
So let's talk about, we talk about what goes wrong. Let's talk about what a good whiteboard brief should include. So we've talked about it should be, are we in agreement 3 minutes or less?
It's not a hard and fast rule. Like I've seen some fantastic whiteboard briefs that were over 3 minutes. It's a good gauge for like, are you saying too much or too little? If you're done in 60 seconds, I think you probably didn't cover enough. If you're into the 4 or 5 minute, I have questions about why you're covering certain things now. Like it's just not necessary. because it starts to drown out the important aspect of the brief. Going back to what's important about the whiteboard brief is what they leave the whiteboard brief with. So I think, and I don't have to go back and listen to that previous episode, but I haven't changed this. The anatomy for a well-executed whiteboard brief is: what's the workout? What's the stimulus? What are the scaling options? And then if you've got time after the third one, throw in a little bit of strategy, or what I like to describe as the things you should consider. You know, whether it be this is grippy, or I don't know if anybody did the math on this, but that's 100 pull-ups.
And this is where it's so important that coaches are doing the same programming as your members, because you can look, there's a workout in the open years. It was like cleans, toes to bar, and like rowing, I want to say. And if you just look at it and do the math, you're like, I'll get this many rounds, or if it was for time, I don't remember. But then when you do it, you're like, oh, I can't grip anything anymore. Right. And and as you coach more and you've seen enough workouts, you see that without doing it. But doing the workout will significantly improve your ability to present it and help them hit the stimulus.
I think you show up differently and you speak to it differently when you've done it. I also think it gives you an incredible amount of legitimacy as a professional. Be like, hey guys, I did this morning. So, you know,
Stand up in front and like, when I did this, yeah, here's what I felt like.
Yeah.
The difference there is immeasurable. Like, you are bonding shared suffering with your members. Even if it was on your own, showing them, I did this, we do the same thing.
I think it just garners more attention, meaning he or she's not just making this up. They're speaking from experience, meaning I'll probably tune in a little bit.
And if you can be like, man, I thought I'd be able to do 155. Turns out that was the wrong call. So I went like, just making those connections and showing them, hey, I get it. You want to go RX, but here's why I didn't, or here's why I did.
Here's what it felt like. And the other thing that I think is important is, in a lot of instances, like, it actually doesn't even matter who it was. If you were to pick any person in the class and be like, hey, this was John's score or Jay's score or Fern's score or whatever, you've now given something very important, which is a frame of reference. It's not just an arbitrary workout that we pulled out of the ether. But if I said, hey, Rich Froning, Matt Frazier did this in 5 minutes. Immediately everybody's just like, well, I'm not fucking doing it in 5 minutes. Well, like,
just to be clear, on a recent episode, you compared yourself to MJ and LeBron. Are you now comparing yourself to Rich and Matt? I just want to be clear.
I mean, why wouldn't I?
Hey, you did beat Ben Smith.
Did beat Ben Smith, 2012.
But no, and I love, back in the day, I used to love the whiteboard. And I still think whiteboards have so much value in a box. Like, you come in and you're like, oh, Fern got this. And whether it's I want to beat him, or you don't always go RX and you have someone at the box that you're pretty, and like, oh, they went 95. I should probably go 95. Like, it's so valuable. And you can do that on Wattify and Push Press, et cetera. But I love the whiteboard for that reason.
Yeah. And even if you didn't do it, you can still utilize that tactic by other people's scores. Be like, hey guys, if you guys, just for reference, here's where's a couple scores from earlier. I saw this one. This is kind of what that looked like. So, you know, so plan accordingly is really what I'm trying to frame up here. And again, it's like, I'm creating a wireframe for them to place themselves somewhere inside of the box. But if I don't give the appropriate wireframe and I only give the components, like, there's no box for them to play in, right? So part of my job is to set the boundaries. Like, what is out of bounds now? Like, imagine playing basketball and there was like no lines on the court. Like, everybody would just fucking run all over the place.
There's too many lines. I don't know what any of them are. There's like a key. Is that what it's called? A key?
Top of the key. Yeah, there you go. I still don't know why it's called a key, but actually I do. But anyway, yeah, it's important for you to provide the framework so that they have some frame of reference for what that would mean to them, at which point you're far less likely to get pushback or problems, it's still going to happen. And as you get more and more seasoned, there's many things behind the whiteboard brief that would double down on the whiteboard brief that would get somebody to make a good decision. But
let's go slightly off topic for 1 second, because whenever we talk about time caps and the whiteboard brief, inevitably someone's like, but we've got this member that always goes RX. And it's easy. I get it. Like, for me, it's a cop out to be like, own the class. Like, because I get it. Like, not all coaches are level fours, which gives you maybe a little more confidence, or I've done this thousands of times. But someone said, like, what would you do? And no joke, I know you've done this. I know I've done it. I'm like, hey, I'm taking weight off of your bar. And that may be like 10 steps later. It starts right at the whiteboard brief. But when I say own the class, like, that's what I mean. Like, hey, this dude, Kevin, is clearly not going to hit the stimulus, clearly not going to be within the time cap, which will potentially push the next class, the next class. Hey, Kevin, you've got 135 on there. When you come back to the bar, it's going to be 95. Go unbroken. Like, you need to be comfortable and confident in doing that. But also, like we said earlier, like, if I see Kevin loaded up with 135 and I've done a good job leading up whiteboard brief, specific warm-up, WOD buildup, it's very apparent whether or not he's going to hit the stimulus.
Well, I think about it this way. The more warning signs I put in front of driving off of the cliff, the less likely somebody is to drive off of the cliff. If there's just one, they might have been breezing by too fast, and they're like, hey, sharp turn ahead, no railing. And you're like, oh, I wasn't fucking paying attention, and I was texting. But if I'm like every 50 feet for 2.5 miles, it's like, pay attention, sharp turn, you don't want to die, right? Like, those things, people are like, what the fuck is happening at this turn? Like, I'm curious now. Like, I'm slowing down because you've put so many red flags in front of this. So the question becomes, what would those be? Okay, so let's outline a couple. Number one is emphasize the stimulus, meaning like, this is this many rounds, or this is this time frame. Reemphasize the stimulus, which is like, it is not this. So it is this, it is not this. Okay. Then you can go back into that and you can reemphasize those a third time inside of the whiteboard brief and be like, as you cover scaling options, which is like, hey, if you guys cannot make this, here are a couple of scaling options. We can bring the weight down. We can use a different object, blah, blah, blah. Then if I get through that cleanly, I can talk strategy B. In order to get through your first round in this time frame, which matches to the stimulus, you would need to be moving at about a 75-second round pace. Okay, so now I've done it like 3 or 4 times before you've even left the whiteboard brief. Red flags. Okay, what else we do? As we get to the specific warm-up, we get loading in there. Great, cool. I can be like, hey, listen, as we're working through this, if you're struggling on an empty barbell, consider what weight you're going to be using for the workout. We do a test round. I say, all right, guys, I want you to do the test round. It needs to be done under 60 seconds. And this is an important one. Pay attention, everybody. If you do not do the first set of 5 unbroken, we're taking weight off the bar. So now what I've done is I've made it not a conversation. I've told you what the outcome is if you do not do the thing that I want you to do. So I gave you 3 or 4 instances of the whiteboard brief. I talked to you about it during the specific warm-up. And now I've given you the if this, then that scenario. So now it's not even a discussion. I was like, it was binary, right? It's just like, you didn't do it. I'm taking weight off of the bar. Now, there's tactful ways to do the follow-up when they fail to meet the criteria that you've just laid out. Right. And it's just like, Jay, I told you you're a weak bitch. Take that weight off. Right. Like, that's not a great one. Right. I'll be like, hey, cool. Like, that's going to get unnecessarily heavy and sloppy because we can't do 5 right now. We're definitely not going to get faster on the back end. Let's bring it down 15 pounds. And I want you to move much faster. And hell, I want you to even move faster even in round 1. And that's the kind of movement that I want to see in round 5, not in round 1. So now I've done this numerous times. You might get some pushback. I'm good. And I'm like, hey, live to train another day. Take it off today. We'll revisit tomorrow. I told you 5 times already.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it also goes back to you leading by example. If you're a coach that scales appropriately and, you know, shows members that you're doing that, they're going to be more likely to listen to you. You know, and the WOD buildup shows you everything. I once at a level one saw James Hobart make the participants do 21 thrusters to prove they can do 21 thrusters unbroken. You know, and I think that was a bit over the top, but like, there's a point where you're like, if you can't do this twice, like, you shouldn't do it once.
Well, I also think you can use certain things to your advantage, meaning like, I don't think you necessarily have to justify everything. Like, but I can do it. I can really know, but like, hey, based on what I just saw, after round one, you will no longer be capable to hold that pace, which means this class is going to run over and we're not doing that. Like, we're going to impede into the next class. So I need you to take the weight down because you going over on your timeline was not part of the lesson plan. So
I wish I can remember. Maybe it was you. This was a great one. Say you're doing Fran. It
probably was me.
Say you're doing Fran. Someone was like, hey, on the second round, you can go up in weight. Like, if let's go 75 or 55 if you're a female, right? Like, let's go scale. And if after the round of 21, you want to go 95 still, you can. No one ever does.
Nobody ever does that. Why would you do that? You're like, no, I'm good.
You know, it was our...
I can do Fran prescribed and I wouldn't opt for going up in the second round.
I was talking to, I think it was Jenny and Brentney. We worked a seminar together recently and I think Fran was up on .com and I was like, am I ever going to do Fran? I'm at the point in my life where I'm like, will I ever do Fran in my life again?
I might do it like once a decade just to get into that, just to see what that age bracket time is. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it sub five. I'm good.
I think I would do it again if I was like, I'm never going to touch my best, which is sub three. But I think I want to be able to like walk away from a 5-minute Fran for most of my life.
Oh, I mean, I let's be honest, you're carrying excess fitness if you can do that.
Are you saying I'm excessively fit?
I'm saying did you say fat? I couldn't hear it. Your microphone is broken.
No, I don't know if I could anymore. Like, there's a, when you have a 3-minute Fran, like you could do a 5-minute Fran and never be out of breath, right? But I think now I'd have to push to be under five.
Which again, like, let's be real. Like, if you can do a 5-minute Fran of 95-pound thrusters and pull-ups, the reality is like you're doing just fine. Like, if you, yes, would you want to do it faster? For sure.
Sure.
But think about think about where that puts you in the spectrum of the population.
And that's where everyone goes wrong. It's like, if you have a 400-pound deadlift, like you're set, you're good. Like
you're a superhero.
Right. Like, I mean, I would argue like, look, go heavier. Like we chase performance, obviously fitness, et cetera. But once you have a 315 deadlift, I'm like, if you're picking up more than 315 in the real world, like, if you're either working construction or you have an emergency going on.
Yeah. And now it doesn't mean you can't be stronger because like,
sure,
who doesn't want to be stronger, but yes, for the purposes of navigating life, unless you are a day laborer, like the chances of you ever actually using that outside of an emergency are virtually none.
None. You know, I think Sherwood used to talk about that. Like you have more fitness than you will ever need.
Which is great. We want excess, yeah, right? That's the whole point.
Let's bring it back. We got the stimulus. We've talked about the stimulus. Let's think about scaling options. When you're doing your whiteboard brief, are you presenting specific scaling options? Are we talking about like, hey, you can go anything under this weight, or if it's muscle ups,
no,
for example, here you're
I like to give like 2 to 3 options and then open it up. So I don't know.
Let's go a different workout. Let's go Diane, right? 21:15:9 okay. Deadlifts, handstand pushups.
Got it. Be like, hey guys, first option for the deadlift is bring the weight down. We definitely want to do the first rep unbroken. So if you can't do 21 deadlifts at 225, then let's bring it down to 185 or something in there, but let's find something appropriate. For the handstand pushups, if you've got them, smoke them. Bring down the volume if you don't necessarily have 45. If getting upside down today is going to be problematic, we can press dumbbells. We can do a lot of other options. I've got a couple of things dialed up for you, but get with me as we work through. Some of those will be built into the warm-up.
Nailed it. I love it. I think there's times and certain workouts lend themselves better to this, where it's like, here are your options. Versus like you said, like anything under this is a scaling option. And I think.
That's a great point. Do you mind if I interrupt?
Do I have an option?
I'm trying to be polite. The you should predetermine when you're going to have like hard scaling options.
What would be a different example?
Meaning like I, like for my level four, there was one of the workouts I had hard scaling options because there it was, I can tell you, I had ring muscle ups in the workout. And for that one, I was like, you could do a ton of things, right? I'm not doing a ton of things in that scenario. I'm going to do one really, really, really well. I'm going to spend some time there. So I'm going to be like, hey, if this is going to be the scaling option for the day, there are other days when I'll give you full carte blanche of what you want to do there. Well, I'll give you 3, 4, 5 options. Today ain't the day. Now, a couple reasons that you would do that. One would be if a movement falls into the have and have nots, where there's a wide range of scaling options in between A and B, right? There's A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6, A7, and then B, right? That would be one where you're like, hey, for today, here's what we're going to do in order to keep the timeline in check and I don't have to cover 58,000 things. Two is if the workout is long, meaning like I don't have time to cover 4 options, here's the option we're using today. Mm-hmm. The third scenario might be is if what would be an example? A banded pull-up might be an example where, hey, I need you making really fast transitions. And if it's going to take you forever to get in and out of this band setup that we have here, which is, I wouldn't get on the rabbit hole about bands, but like, that's not the workout for today. I need you in and I need you out. So today we're not using bands.
Yeah. And I think some other obvious ones are like kettlebell, wall ball, or dumbbells, right? Where it's like, these are what we have. There's no like, if you can't go 70, you're going 55 or whatever, 55, right? Like there's right. we don't have
a 62. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I think there's a time and a place for that. I do think an often overlooked scaling option, bringing it back to Diane, it's like, hey, there's 45 handstand pushups here. And often people are like, well, I can't do that, so I'll go to the scaled option, but I can do 25. So we often just think about lowering the load when it comes to, you know, the barbell or, you know, the weightlifting portion. But with gymnastics, you can decrease the reps.
I think in gymnastics, there is a point where like, if you decrease them to so low,
you're not doing 3 handstand.
Yeah, correct.
But if like 21-15-9 deadlift, 15-12-9 handstand pushups.
Yeah. I think if you have the movement, the first option is decrease the volume. Meaning that's why I say smoke them if you got them. What I mean by that is like, if you have the movement, we're going to do the movement, but we might adjust the rep scheme in the movement. But like if you have muscle ups, but you don't have 45, well, we're not going to do, you know, ring transitions and dips in the low rings. I'm like, we're going to do 25 muscle ups because you have muscle ups. You just don't have that many of them.
Right. And that's how people get better at these gymnastic movements while doing class.
Correct.
It's people that never do. Yeah. If you never do these movements, you're obviously not going to get better at them.
Yeah. And then so other scaling options in there could be Amanda, right? So 9-7-5 of muscle ups. Let's say they're good on the snatch, but the muscle ups are a little janky. And so we're doing 9-7, that's 16 plus another 5. So I got 21. I'm like, well, 21's definitely not in the cards for this person. And I'm like, hey, you know what you're going to do? You're going to do 3 per round, right? Because I know those 3 will probably be a double and a single, if not a single, single, single into another single, single, single. But they're going to be moving about the same pace as somebody who can break each one of those sets into 2, right? So they go 6-3, and then they go 4-3, and then they go 3-2, where somebody who could do all 21. So you just do a straight set across to get them 9 muscle ups versus the 21, you know.
It's an often overlooked scaling option, and people need to think about that a little more often. How about demo? Do you demo at the whiteboard?
Oh man, who was I talking to about this recently?
Probably Pat, with the knowledge.
Maybe. I am not a fan of demoing at the whiteboard brief.
None of the movements.
I don't one off maybe here and there if it's like a weird one, but it will be a very brief, and it would be like I've just honestly never seen it done well.
I agree with you. I dislike it. I think it's not natural. Like the you know it doesn't lend itself to the brief. I think. You know,
it creates multiple problems when I've seen it, and then people are like, well, we'll show them with the movement. I'm like, well, that's what the warm up is for in coaching. So here's the problem. Number one, when I start, it can create, just practically speaking, it can create problems, right? Meaning, like, if all of the stuff that I need is not anywhere close to the whiteboard, are we going on a field trip now? Like, what are we doing? Be like, okay, we're going to bring it over there. I'm like, so now I'm going to be doing full barbell movements at the whiteboard. Like, I just find it to, it does not add the value that people think it does. And I should be doing it elsewhere is really the point. It also creates a very, it creates a, it breaks the flow of the brief where it's just like it now becomes this weird choppy thing and inherently takes away from what is the main point of the brief. The main point of the brief is like, what should happen? Not the movement. The movement, we're going to cover the movement fuck a dozen times in the warm-up, the general warm-up and the specific warm-up in the test round, just cover it there. I'm just not a fan of it, and I've never seen it done well, like literally not once. Even people that I think are really good at it, I'm like, that was weird.
Did you do it at your level four?
No.
You didn't demo?
Not at the whiteboard brief.
Okay, and obviously it worked. You passed.
Of course I did.
I know. I mean, you're getting assessed. So, you know, we talk about demoing in the level two lecture. So if you can pass your level four without it, they're suggesting.
No, you can't like not demo it elsewhere.
Right. So you show them. I think there's a time and a place too. You got some new people in class and you're like, hey, we're snatching today.
Yeah, I might mime something and be like, hey, above the knee. Yeah. Right.
But. Yeah. And, you know, then you have the filthy 50s. It's like, what are you running around the gym? Like,
I'm going to demo 10 movements in the whiteboard. Now the whiteboard brief is 10 minutes long and I only had fucking 20 minutes to do the workout anyway.
So we hope that helps people get better at the whiteboard brief. And again, if you want to make improvements and you want some of the best in the world giving you feedback, check out the Knowledge Pro.
Yeah, check it out. And then I challenge everybody. Again, it's an art, right? You should be able to give the requisite information in a concise fashion, meaning timely, and it should be educational and entertaining. That's where it becomes fun. Can you give all of those things and people are like joking around at the whiteboard and like good. And then I'm like, all right, everybody good. Any questions? Nope. Cool. All right, let's go. Let's make it happen. It doesn't have to be dry. And like, that's not what we're suggesting at all. Like you can check all of those boxes and make it entertaining.
It should be. I mean, it's gotta be at least engaging.
Right. Right. So,
all right. Well, that was good. We brought it back home. We came full circle.
We do have to go back and find which episode that was. I bet it was the first five.
Hey, Cody's going to be listening to this. Link the first episode. Anyone that listens to the original episode and this episode, let us know if we've gotten better over the last few years.
We'll give something away for free. We'll give away. I'm not going to say we're giving away. We'll figure out what to give you.
Okay, if you give us everyone that gives us feedback or only...
First person.
All right, and real feedback. You have to tell us something we said in the first episode. You can't make it up.
Yeah, so real feedback from first person... I'll make this up because we can do this. So real feedback from first episode we did this to this one and the differences. And if you are not already signed up for Knowledge Pro, we'll give you a free month.
Ooh, there you go. Let's do it. All right, and then... In the meantime, if you want to learn more about the Knowledge or the Knowledge Pro, click the link. If you're a coach and you want your affiliate owner to sign up for Affiliate U, hit us up.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the Best Hour of Their Day podcast. We appreciate you listening and choosing to have us help you in your passion for coaching and affiliate ownership. You can find more episodes just like this on all podcast platforms. If you're interested in learning more, you can reach out to us on any social media platforms, or you can visit www.besthouroftheirday.com to book a call.
If you found this episode helpful for you, please share it so that we can help other coaches and affiliate owners to help build a bigger and stronger CrossFit community. Thanks for listening.